Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Many contactees, women, report visitations where babies are placed in their arms, babies they understand to be theirs. There are emotions of love and anguish as the babies are taken back. Other women report times when they're sure they're pregnant, the pregnancy even confirmed at the doctor's office, then disappearing. This is often presented, particularly by Bud Hopkins, as a traumatic event, abduction and forced pregnancy with removal of the fetus. But the accounts belie this, as why present a baby later for a loving contact? I, Nancy, participated in the development of Zeta-human hybrids during my teens and early 20s, and recalled this under hypnosis. And I quote, "I'm thinking about how we always kept the windows open and the frogs would clang out in a constant chorus. I liked to sleep in the front bedroom where I could hear the frogs. I could sleep in there alone most of the time. The bedclothes were pulled back and he was checking out my tummy. It's like poking, like they do to check to see if your appendix is sore, poking around. But it doesn't seem to be a big deal. I remember the sound of the frogs, waking up and finding that there was somebody standing there. He'd come to check on something, I think. It was a status check. I get up and follow him out the house, because the house was open. The whole area was very remote. We were at the end of a street, dark, in the middle of the night. I get up in my nightgown and follow him out the door. I remember one time when I went outside and I explained it to myself that I just went out to check the night or something like that. I have to get on to something. I'm thinking of the term bidet, where you straddle it from a standing position. There's all this heaviness in my pelvic area. I have a little cramping now in my stomach, the same sort of sensation when you have menstrual cramps, when you're just starting your period and it's first breaking through so the flow can start. Cramping a little bit and feeling a release of pressure. In other words, the pelvic inflammation or engorgement is lessened, and at the same time the cramping stopped. I don't think too much about that. Somehow, it doesn't seem to be a big deal. Certainly not as bad as throwing up because you're sick to your stomach. It's not anything even in that ballpark. It just seems to be a very small thing. I don't think anything about it. I'm walking back. I'm worried about getting yelled at because I've been out for a walk. I'm not supposed to do that. It's all very dark. Everybody's asleep. I just go back to bed. I can remember times when I thought I was supposed to have my period and I didn't. Just that kind of cramping that happens naturally anyway. I wouldn't have said anything to my mother because I wouldn't have thought anything was wrong. I do remember one summer when I was 19 and working at a lodge. My stomach was slightly more than flat. I went to see a doctor because my periods had stopped. By that time, I'd already had a period. One started after I made the appointment. He said it was normal for women to stop if they travel or work hard and the like, so I thought nothing of it. I was a virgin, and the thought of pregnancy never crossed my mind. End of my hypnotic recall. If this is what a female contactee experiences, one who agrees to participate in the development of a Zeta-human hybrid, what does a male contactee experience? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Donor Fathers, written December 1996. In keeping with our tendency to share personal experiences and seek emotional support from others, most reports from contactees who are donors to the hybrid program have been from women. These reports describe how the women who were donors were checked frequently to determine when they were about to ovulate or have vaginal procedures to extract ova or implant the zygote or remove the fetus after the few weeks that it remains in the mother's womb. Donor mothers are also the partner who report meeting their offspring, highly emotional encounters for longing and regret at the necessity of separation between mother and child are openly expressed. Where is the father in all of this, the male donor? In fact, the donor fathers have equally compelling experiences with their offspring and physical procedures to relate. The reason fewer reports emerge from the donor father is due to a conflict between the father-donor role and what human society perceives as the male role. In human societies, the male is the one in charge, the one who does to others, including the women, not the one done to. This perception goes beyond the sex act. It permeates human society and the roles assumed by males and females. Males lead. They give orders. They make the decisions. So the role they experience as donor fathers is utterly out of keeping with what they have been told since boyhood is their proper place. Father donors are examined as to their health regularly and undergo sperm extraction at a time when the donor mother's ova is ready. Unlike the usual male sperm donation in human society, where the male is presumed to have selected his bedmate and the time and place of a sexual encounter as well, donor fathers in the hybrid program choose neither the mate or the time or place. To add to this insult, they are in the passive position when giving the donation. A cup is placed over their genitals, and the sexual response generated through mental influencing solely. There is no physical stimulation and thus little pleasure. Where donor fathers are as willing to participate as the donor mothers, when back in human society, this is not the kind of experience that gets loud discussion in the locker room. Thus, not much is heard about the donor father's experiences. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Why is the Zeta-human hybrid being created at this time? Does it relate to the coming pole shift? The expectation that 90% of humanity will die as a result? Does it relate to the transformation when the earth is scheduled to become a home for those souls having chosen a service to others' spiritual orientation? And has this occurred before to man? I quote from Zeta Talk, Cataclysm Link, written July 1995. Our goal is to genetically engineer a Homo sapiens who carries enough Zeta reticulin genetic structure to be more intelligent, more telepathic, more caring, less violent, and, we might add, not prone to fat. Should the Earth be a planet not prone to polar shifts, this would occur anyway. The genetic infusion would be more gradual. At some point, we would elicit the cooperation of the populace being genetically engineered, and at some point, the general orientation of the populace would be service to others. These parents, in all likelihood, would want for their offspring a better life. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Okay, so we'd be making our next leap forward regardless of a pole shift. But the fact that many souls will be ready for an incarnation after a 90% die-off is a factor. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Stepping Up the Pace, written July 1995. After the pole shift, the majority of service to other humans due to remain on Earth will require new housing, so to speak, and our task has been to provide sufficient infant hybrids at that point in time. We are rushing at this time to meet that goal. Therefore, the number of hybrids are numerous. How are we stepping up our hybrid program? Is everyone having sex all the time and popping babies out yearly? Are we using genetic engineering techniques, such as in vitro production, where our genetic sampling is sufficient to go into mass production? Neither is the case. The hybrid program has yet to be allowed to go into automatic, where we can let nature take its course. We are still braiding the genetic thread, correcting flaws with insertion of missing DNA, and working around the clock on these issues. Because of the large heads, due to increased intelligence, and smaller hip size due to our zeta reticulin contribution, infants are not carried to term by the mother. This is not, technically speaking, necessary. Infants within the mother are close to her heart, but infants developed outside the mother can be sent our love too. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Stepping Up the Pace. So what's going to happen? Will the human race die out like Neanderthal man? Full-blood Zetas will not die out as their worlds are not scheduled for the next leap forward. But in time, a full-blood human will be a rare item. And I quote from ZetaTalk Time Frame, written July 1995. Thus, eventually, perhaps within 100 years, or what you might call a generation, the Earth will be composed of service to other communities. Some will be strictly human, but will begin interacting with other communities, intermarrying, and will thus merge. End of the quote from ZetaTalk. So the main reason for the die-out of the human race is because service to other communities will want to live in communities with the hybrids and Zetas. But what of the service to self-humans? For the Zetas, sometimes these humans are taken away to their new prison colony homes ahead of an earthly death. What then can they breed on as humans there? And I quote from ZetaTalk, Full Blood, written July 1995, also. One should not assume that full-blood humans will die out entirely. This almost never occurs during species transitions, especially when a certain level of intellect is attained. There may be service to other groups on Earth composed entirely of humans that continue isolated and content with their level of intellect, for instance. There will be service to self-humans taken before their human form is terminated, who will be human on other planets. This occurs frequently in the service to self-orientation, as surviving infants are hard to come by in this orientation. Nurturing is rare. Thus, those choosing this orientation often are required to keep their current incarnation. End of the quote from ZetaTalk. So perhaps, like Bigfoot, full-blood humans may be around here and there, but in the main, an endangered species. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Endangered Species, also written July 1995. Given the population explosion, why would the human race be back in business in a hurry after the cataclysms? Three reasons. One, a high mortality rate where babies won't survive and the birth rate will be less than zero. Two, a movement of the service to others toward living with or near the high-tech centers of the hybrids, where intermarriage will occur. And three, a tendency of the service to self to eradicate themselves and each other. End of the quote from ZetaTalk. So what goes during genetic engineering projects such as the Zeta-human hybrid creation? Do we just mix sperm and ova together from both sets of parents and hope for the best? Hardly. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Engineering Techniques, written October 1996. Human participants in development of a hybrid species assume that their eggs and sperm are taken so that the desired Zeta genes can be mixed in during conception. Often, female participants assume they have been impregnated via artificial insemination, when in fact, they have just had a fetus inserted for a brief gestation period. In the main, mixing the egg and sperm is the process, but several steps are involved. Prior to combining the male and female strands, the strands are examined for undesirable traits such as heritable diseases. Thus, it's not simply the fastest swimming sperm that becomes daddy, nor the nearest and most available egg that becomes mommy. After selecting the human male and female contribution, snipping and replacing occurs. In this process, Zeta genetics routinely replace other human genetics. Some human genes are routinely discarded, and some Zeta genes, not present at all in humans, are inserted. In some cases, genes from an ancestor are used to update the human genes secured from the male and female donors. Almost invariably, these are taken from data banks we maintain, but on rare occasion, we are allowed to go back in time to secure a needed sample. This step inserts and accentuates a desired human trait. End of the quote from ZetaTalk on Engineering Techniques. So, we're snipping out genetic diseases. That sounds like a good thing. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Genetic Diseases, written July 1995. Genetic diseases are concomitant with evolution. Autoimmune diseases are the immune response turned wrong. Obesity is a protective maneuver to maximize food consumption during times of plenty, gone wrong. Foodstuffs do not spoil when packed around the ribs in the form of fat. All genetic diseases, when their cause is understood, can be seen to be a normal maneuver of the body gone wrong. In the animal kingdom, afflicted animals quickly die out. You protect your afflicted, allowing them not only to survive, but to propagate. In this way, your genetic diseases almost seem to increase. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Sounds tricky, as if the disease is related to a valued trait, like immunity itself versus autoimmune diseases. That snipping could be tricky. And then there are the recessive traits, which don't necessarily present themselves as something needing to be snipped. They hide. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Recessive Genes, written October 1998. Humans have noted in mapping human genes that a number of DNA links are dormant. The number casually noted by humans is in no way the vast span of dormant portions of the human physiology. There are many, many portions of the human body which are remnants or leftovers, unused. The appendix is one. Your DNA is rife with genes which, if allowed to express, would horrify and surprise humans. The hybrids that we are creating will have many dormant genes in them. A clear example is the violent nature of humans, which evolved to allow humans to live on a planet where large predators exist. Were it not for your violent nature, you would not have survived past a couple of generations. We suppress that violent nature in our hybrids, yet these genes exist. Just as you would be horrified to develop tentacles or a gaping mouth in the center of your stomach, with smacking lips ready to take on whatever might float by, in the future, the new hybrids would be horrified to find their dormant, violent nature expressing from hidden genes. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Other than genetic diseases, what else is getting snipped out from the human contribution, or perhaps included as a valued asset? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Human Traits, written July 1995. Human emotions are something we are including, along with many other characteristics. The list would be too long to include in its entirety, but we will mention a few. Your hair and soft skin, although we haven't had much luck with hair. Your desire for touch, the physical relationship of parents and caregivers to young, where nursing and handling and rocking are prevalent. We hope to include the ability to nurse, and are having luck with the desire to touch and hold. The sex drive is definitely included, and where this drive varies among our hybrids, this is in proportion to the variance among humans we have found. Intelligence has been increased, as has the ability to communicate telepathically. Curiosity and creativity have also been increased, as these are factors of intelligence. Introspection has been increased, as has the tie between the conscious and subconscious been strengthened. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on Human Traits. Ah, and what are the primary Zeta traits to be included? Hey, IQ for one. And I quote from Zeta Talk, The Zeta IQ, written July 1995. Our IQ is higher than yours and also different. You will observe when comparing your intelligence to that of an animal that some things relate and are similar, and some things are radically different. Consciousness is one such difference. The chimp is clever, can learn sequences and apply a certain amount of logic. They use tools in a limited manner. However, they aren't conscious in the same sense that you are. They do not ponder their immortality. They do not ruminate about their guilt. They do not wonder why the stars move about in the heavens in the manner that they do. Most particularly, they do not think about how they relate to the bigger scheme of things. They are not conscious of themselves as an entity. In comparing our increased intelligence, numbers alone do not describe the situation. Where your mind carries on dozens of thoughts simultaneously, ours carry on thousands. You are unaware of most of the thinking your mind does. You are only aware of the conscious thought at the front of your mind. Yet parts of your mind are concerned with sensing distance around you, the need to shift your position, sensing the body language of others around you, calculating your physical hungers, and plotting how these will be satiated, etc. In terms of IQ, where should we Zetas take one of your IQ tests, which measures speed and accuracy, we would measure around 287 IQ points. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. If human emotions are a valued trait to be included, is this missing in the Zeta? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Zeta Emotions, written July 1995. Regarding whether we, the Zetas, are capable of feeling love and joy, or are we cold fish? We are not cold fish. The issue of emotion has been misunderstood. What is meant by emotion? Humans experience a range of emotion, a wide range they know by name and recognize, and a wider range of emotions they have not even cataloged. We will enumerate. The positive emotions are love, which can include a sense of bonding, or a sense of affectionate possession, or a sense of desire for the loved object. Bonding expands to comradeship, protection of those dependent and weak, affiliation, loyalty, and pride of association. Affectionate possession, a common form of love among the spiritually immature, is less an empathetic concern for the other than a pride of ownership. It can lead to the O.J. Simpson syndrome. Desire for the loved object can include love of food as passionate consumption or love of a sex object. How do we Zetas compare to humans on these positive emotions? We feel a sense of bonding, without a doubt, and in all its forms. Affectionate possession is also possible, but in the service to others orientation, this does not come to the fore and command the attention it does in more spiritually immature entities. Desire for the loved object is blunted in the Zetas, so that we are aware of our need for food and sex, but this is a very quiet voice. Those who wonder if the Zeta have sex should be aware that where we no longer use our sex organs for reproduction, we still have mild sensations in this regard. Not lacking imagination, the Zetas are looking forward to a return to a full sex life when incarnate in the hybrids. Affection for food is not the driver in foci that it is for humans, but we Zetas are aware of the weaknesses that come from a lack of nourishment. Thus we feel affection for our renewal baths. In genetically engineering the hybrids, we are not including a compulsion for foodstuffs with consequent obesity. The negative emotions are primarily control, with a desire to negate or diminish any factor that removes the entity from primary control of the environment. All this is all too familiar to humans. The desire for control leads to an emotion of glorifying in control, of wallowing in power. How do the Zetas compare to humans on these negative emotions? We do not go on power trips, nor do we miss this emotional trip. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So just why do the Zetas have a more blunted emotional life than humans? Per the Zetas, this is due to our differing evolution. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Evolution Impact, written January 2003. Do we have emotions? Yes. Do we have sexual feelings? Yes. Are these greater than human emotions and sex drives? No. Why the difference? We evolved on different worlds under different stresses and selective determinants. The Earth is a particularly violent world, large carnivores on every continent, so that many can scarcely be free of this worry day or night. Big cats, wolf packs, immense bears, sharks, and thus to survive, the quick reaction to attack or danger was emotion. What do you suppose fear or anger is? Does an evolving creature need this, per se? It is to elicit action, and the stronger the emotion, the faster the action. Likewise, a mother's concern for her baby, a dominant male's concern for protecting and retaining his harem, are survival-related emotions. The passive human gets eaten. The human with strong emotions survived and passed on their genes. A strong sex drive is likewise selective, as those males with a strong drive would fight for their harem, where those with a weak drive would turn their backs and let the harem get eaten. A sex drive in the female is also survival selective, as the horny female will stick close to the dominant male, get intimate often, and thus enhance the bond and desire on the male's part to protect her, as well as keep her close to the protector. We have stated that on our world, the worlds within Zeta Reticuli, which we evolved on, there are no large carnivores. We were transplanted there into worlds that would do no more than evolve moss and bugs. Thus, our large eyes are for seeing in the very dim light, which is what life on those worlds entailed. Thus, our sex was for procreation, and the process of natural selection more related to cunning, being able to figure out how to solve problems, how to create technology or extend a food supply, than brute force as rage. Likewise, emotion was not only not required, it was a disruptive element. It would never evolve, and if it expressed due to genetic mutation, then the Zeta was less likely to have a harem than another, so was selected out during sexual partnering. Our hybrids will have the emotional range and sex drive and variation that humans have, not our more limited range. This is because the Earth is our new home, the home of the hybrids, and these characteristics are native to the Earth. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. But appearances can be deceiving, and the serious Zetas, appearing in a group and working closely, are not like insects in a hive, a group mind, as some disinformation asserts. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Zeta Clones, written July 1995. The Zetas are accused of having a group mind, seemingly operating like insects by rote and without individuality. Where did these assumptions come from? First, we reproduce by cloning, so our appearance can be remarkably similar. Second, our mode of communicating is telepathic, over the heads of humans who, for the most part, sense no conversation going on at all. Third, there is a lack of argument and indecision that humans see in us when we are at work, attending to our contactees, as we have all agreed ahead of time on how to handle issues that might ensue. Humans who see us having a group mind are drawing these conclusions on scanty data. Imagine how adult male humans would appear to an alien race encountering them only at work. There they are, all in their standard gray business suits, white shirts, and ties. Similar haircuts, beards cut off, carrying identical black briefcases, greeting each other with a standard handshake. Clearly, this is a group mind. When the leader speaks, the others all nod and smile slightly. They even clap as a group. The data missing from this picture distorts it. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So what are the emotions of humans regarding the development of the Zeta-human hybrid race and being phased out as a race altogether in all likelihood? Some humans are distinctly hostile. First, there's the issue of custody rights. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Custody Rights, written May 1997. They hear emotional stories of mothers holding babies they instinctively recognize as theirs, where it seems the babes are torn from their mother's arms to be returned to emotionless alien nurses standing at the side. Those who actually participate in these dramas understand the underlying framework, and where they may be expressing emotion, they do not express rage or even resentment, though perhaps some sadness. Those who participate in the hybrid program are doing so because they agreed prior to their birth, prior even to their next incarnation being selected, to participate. They understand the situation, that their hybrid children cannot live on the earth in human society at this time. They understand the rich and loving environment their hybrid children are being raised within. Being solidly in the service to other orientation, they do not wish to remove their offspring from the environment to be placed in the human setting where in all likelihood they would be maimed and killed and taunted. Custody rights over the hybrid children is not an issue of the true parents, but becomes an issue with those who are inserting themselves into the drama, outsiders as it were, in that they scarcely understand the many factors at play and most certainly don't understand the resolve and commitment made by the human participants, they are not even armed with the facts. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. In fact, participants most often have a pre-birth agreement to participate, the soul wishing to participate in the hybrid program, hardly something forced upon them. So custody arrangements are not something the human participant would be hostile about. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Pre-Birth Agreement, written November 1998. Pre-birth agreements are relatively rare. Our hybrid program has been granted permission to institute more pre-birth agreements than in previous centuries, where it was close to nil, because we need to ensure cooperation with those who hold genetic parentage. Without a pre-birth agreement, it's a toss of the dice on what might incarnate into a piece of genetic material, the babe, and that babe choosing not to cooperate with our hybrid program. So we have certain key DNA parcels, the babes, incarnated with pre-birth agreements without too much hassle. Those who have a pre-birth agreement become aware of it at a fairly young age. They sense something different and become fully aware of it when the time is right. Nonetheless, they cooperate with this pre-birth agreement remarkably well. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The need for the pre-birth agreement is due to the need to follow family lines, something that Zeta described as weaving genetics, to pull forward desired traits, strengthen them, and ensure that missing pieces can be recovered. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Family Line, written July 1995. The hybrid program runs along family lines. When combining genes from a human with Zeta reticulin genes, there is some unfortunate loss. This loss is captured in subsequent efforts. This is not unlike a braid where the strands are woven back in. The braid is stronger than loose hair or twine. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Another point of hostility is that humans are not in charge. This hostility, again, does not come from the participants, but from other humans in general resenting the alien presence. I get email on this all the time from resentful humans who claim the Earth is theirs and aliens should just go away. They forget how it is they came to be and are not still dumb apes swinging from trees. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Who's in Charge? Written July 1995. Some humans feel they should be in charge of their own genetic engineering, or in charge of the question as to whether genetic engineering is even necessary. This is not reasonable, although those being denied this authority may fuss and argue. These issues were decided after much deliberation, and this is not a matter done casually, nor is this a one-time matter. This has been done repeatedly to Homo sapiens, who are only able to complain, having a voice and mind, because of just such a process in the past. Of course we poll humans to learn what they desire to continue, what characteristics they appreciate. Those humans who will be reincarnating into the hybrid form, the service to others humans who have chosen their orientation, are being polled continuously as to their preferences. They are not voting on the steps to be taken in order to genetically engineer. You may give the plastic surgeon your desires on the shape of the nose, but you don't hold the knife. Zeta genetics are being used as the intelligence of humans cannot be more than doubled using human genetic structure. The best that could be accomplished is a human at the genius level, and what we seek is so very much higher. Telepathy, something your species can barely support, is another issue. Genetic engineering does not make something from nothing. It alters what already exists or inserts something already in existence. A third important issue is the level of violence in your human species. Blinding rage is firmly rooted in your genetic heritage. To carve this out would leave too little remaining. There must be something to counteract it where it is found, in all the reaches of the brain, rather than simply root it out. The Zeta genetics are the counteractant. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. But nevertheless, this not being a logical argument, Hostility among many humans toward the hybrid program is quick and hot. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Hostile Humans, written July 1995. They are emphatic that the Earth belongs to Homo sapiens, that usurpers should leave. It matters not that they, at one time, were the usurpers. The decision to phase out humans, as hard as it may be for those affected to comprehend, are not without input from those affected. Neanderthal man was in agreement with having his version of mankind die out, afflicted as they were with tummy problems not pleasant to live with. A vote was taken, and they were in agreement. Votes that are a true vote are not akin to the voting that occurs on Earth, publicly announced. In these votes, there is hardly a choice. The choice placed before the voters, not what they would even put there, but what the elite have allowed to be placed there. In addition, actual counts, as the 2000 U.S. presidential election demonstrated, are hardly what matters or to be reported accurately. Why would parents not want their children, or themselves for that matter, to be more intelligent, less subject to disease, and have more opportunities? Clearly, the vote went to be engineered for future incarnations. It was a slam dunk, as you say. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. As a participant in the hybrid program, I was given the opportunity to meet with one of my offspring. This occurred before I had children of my own, but I babysat a lot, so I was familiar with how they behave. I was 19, and he appeared to be about 3, so from OVA I contributed at about the age of 16, I gather. Here is the story, and I quote, I hear something outside that sounds like a little crunch on the snow. I reach for my coat and I put that on. On the other side of the garage, there was more open space and some trees and no houses for some ways. I see something. This one's not one of those 12-footer jobs. This one's 100 feet, maybe bigger. It still has that basic saucer shape and it's dark gray. We go underneath the ship. It's not on the ground exactly, although I did hear a crunch sound. There's a little stair thing, 3 or 4 steps that drop down 10 or 15 feet off the center. I'm glancing up in there and it's all dark, but he wants me to go up first. When I get up there, I see the lights are on the inside. It's a room, a center room, 30 feet across, but not the full size of the ship. There's half a dozen Zetas in there. It's not formal, they're just milling around. The walls are an off-white, not the usual grayish color. Well, maybe it only looks grayish if the lights aren't on, because a lot of times when they had those 12-footers, it was during the day and there wasn't that much need for lighting because the door was open. I'm very curious. There doesn't seem to be any kind of an agenda. I get the feeling that the door and the little stair are pulled up behind us. I have no idea if we're in motion or not, if we've lifted. I have the notion that we have, but it's a very gentle liftoff, just a slow rise straight up. I've got my hands in my pockets and I'm looking around. Nobody seems to be paying any attention to me. There's an archway at the side to my right and a couple more of them come in. Seems to be a cluster and I see a little one among them. His head is just above their knees. I actually can't see him because he stays right in the middle of that cluster. He doesn't hang back and he doesn't lead out in front. He's always just right in the middle. I just noticed that some of those little legs are smaller than the others. He's got little light-colored pants on, slightly baggy, and a little shirt, slightly baggy, too. His head is very white, and he doesn't have the gray colors that theirs do. Looks more round rather than the way theirs do, the teardrop shape. His is more round all over. They come out in the room, and he stays right in the middle of them for safety. I'm very curious about this. Then they stand still and I step sideways to my left a step or two and put my hands to my knees, bending over a little bit to get a better look, because he won't come out. He averts his gaze. He just keeps staring at the middle of my shins or at my knees. He won't look up. He's just tiny. His head will come just above my knees. He doesn't look like a little child with a big belly. He's almost as skinny as they are. He's got his little hands in front of him. I'm saying something like, what's your name? I'm introducing myself. I sit down on the floor and I don't look directly at him. I look off to the right and he's looking off to the left. I sit down on the floor and I unbutton my coat. I sit cross-legged. I'm talking the whole time about clothes and about how I have pants on too. And then he comes up a little closer. He's at my left shoulder about 8 inches away looking at me. As long as I'm not looking at him and I'm looking off to the right and talking, he lets himself come up. He's checking out my clothes. I think that's what he's doing, checking out my pants. I'm saying that I wear pants. I take off a shoe and show him my foot that I have toes. I show him my hand that I have fingers. I pull my pants leg up to show him that I have a knee and a leg. I'm just nattering on. He kind of walks down toward my leg, staring at my calf and checking it out. I figure he's curious. I shuck off my coat to show him I have elbows. He's practically on top of me. I'm going up into the hair of my head and I lean my head forward to show him what the hair is. I pull it to show him that you can pull it and it doesn't hurt, that it's attached and what it looks like on the scalp where all those little things spring forth. Then I think I show him my ear and I close my eyes and I open my mouth. I've got my eyes closed because I figure that opening my mouth might frighten him. I put my own fingers in my mouth and touch my teeth so he can see I'm not about to bite him. And I feel this little finger, a little touch, like he wants to touch something too. I got my eyes closed so he won't be shy. Then I hear one of them say, "This is your son." So then I open my eyes and I look up. I'm asking how old he is. It seems like 3.5 years. He doesn't have any hair. His head looks like it's all rounded and white. It doesn't look real hard. It's got dimples here and there. Our skulls are smooth, so I wonder if there's bone under there. Maybe there's just brain. He has tiny little ears. They're very small. His eyes are hazel-colored, and they don't have any whites. His eyeballs are bigger than ours. I don't look at his eyes directly. His eyes are downcast most of the time, or his head's down most of the time, so I don't really get a full-face look at him. He's got slight little bulges over the eyes, not eyebrows, just the smooth part with a hint of a bulge above the eyes. I ask where he lives, and they say, "With us." They say, "He's turned out well, and he was very curious about you." I'm asking him, communicating telepathically, "Is there anything else you want to know?" He's staring at buttons and things like that. I'm thinking about things like pets, furry pets, and kittens. I wonder what kind of toys they have. They say he has a very stimulating environment. I ask, "Will I see him again?" And they say, "Perhaps, if you both want to, we can arrange it." I get the feeling that it's time for me to go. I tell him he's very sweet, just a little doll, so curious. I tell him I thought he turned out well, too. I guess I'm a little teary. End of my quote. I guess I'm a little teary. Quoting it. So where does he live today? Distance is not a matter for those who have mastered space travel. And one day, soon, after the pole shift, they will just teleport back in, dome cities and all. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Where They Live," written January 2003. Our hybrids are living in many places within your solar system, close at hand, as well as elsewhere nearby in other star systems. Currently, as our hybrids as well as ourselves expect to be on the future Earth, we do not want our bodies to become accustomed to a lesser gravity. We are primarily in residence outside of the solar system, in another nearby star system, where a commensurate gravity is available to us. Relocating to Earth is a simple matter, involving setting up residences which have already been constructed and can be relocated intact and quickly so, and selecting a spot on Earth which is previously uninhabited, such as a newly warming Antarctica or a new land emerging from the seas. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So what can we expect when reincarnating into these new hybrid bodies? Emotions, similar sex life to what we have now, a high IQ, Anything else? A longer lifespan, for one thing. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Basic Similarities, written July 1995. Our lifespan is much longer than humans. The lifespan of the hybrid race we are genetically engineering will be as long as the Zetas currently enjoy. In your Earth years, this is 400 years. We experience stability only for the last 50 of this span. In our cultures, we do not rule against suicide. Therefore, if any Zeta finds his life circumstances unbearable, he can end his life in a painless manner without strife. End of the quote. But the real good news is no more farting. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Physiology Differences, written October 1995. The expansion of human lungs is visible, yet our trunks seem firm and immobile. Do we have lungs? We do indeed, but they work asynchronously rather than in unison, one expanding while the other exhales, so the motion is all internal. Our hybrids, however, have unison breathing, but in a pinch could switch over to asynchronous breathing, a latent capacity. The human diet is voluminous and fibrous, reflecting the diet of the base apes that formed the human race, and in truth reflecting the reality of vegetation on your planet and the adaptation that animals evolving on your planet were forced to deal with. If an animal is vegetarian, and most are, they eat continuously, defecate frequently, and deal with digestive gases. Few animals become successful predators, an obvious fact, as if all were predators, there would soon be nothing to prey upon. So humans have as their base an animal that eats masses of fibrous vegetation daily. We Zetas, on our world, have a different diet. Mosses, bugs, algae, crustaceans, and when we ate, almost nothing went to waste. In our hybrids, we have attempted to take the best of both worlds. Humans, we feel sure, would not object to less farting and burping. In the highly civilized world of the future, civilization will focus on those foods that return the highest nutrition. Less eating, less elimination, virtually no digestive gases, and surprisingly, constipation will not be a concern, as the shape of the bowel, being a single straight chute, lends itself to guaranteed elimination. In humans, the kidney works constantly, filtering waste, but in the Zeta, click in only when certain blood chemicals raise to a level requiring attention. Like the heart, which rests between beats, the Zeta kidney rests between Zeta meals. The reason for this pacing is the more complete absorption of nutrients in the Zeta digestive tract, placing a burden on the kidneys, which then require a rest period in which to recoup. Likewise, the Zeta liver is a workhorse that goes the distance after meals and requires a recuperative period. Zetas who overeat get more than overweight. They get sick. Our thinness is not due solely to genetic tendencies. We simply do not overeat. Do the Zetas store fat as humans do? Yes and no. We have this capacity, but our physiology does not make use of it ordinarily. Since we do not digest excess food without getting sick, our bodies keep all nutrition at the ready as a store to be used up before the next meal. No packing it away in fat cells. No saving it for a later day. Our hybrids have the best of both worlds. They are slender because their physiology uses, rather than stores, nutrition, and their appetites pace accordingly. But should they for any reason decide to overeat, they do not suffer as we, the Zetas, do. The Zetas were selected for production of a hybrid race with humans in part because our physiologies are similar. Our blood is also hemoglobin-based, and where a chemist would find all the many Zeta blood components differing from comparable human blood components in quantity and composition, the differences are not dramatic. Likewise with the endocrine system, which have comparable glands and functions. Here, however, there is one dramatic difference. The Zeta do not sleep, though there are regular rest periods where activity essentially stops. There are blood chemistry differences in humans between the wakeful and sleep states, but in the Zeta, these differences do not appear. our hybrid sleep, as we have found the physiology more resilient when able to rest. However, the sleep requirements are much reduced, requiring perhaps one-fifth rather than one-third of the day. And the onset of sleep deprivation does not occur with our hybrids, who are able to bear through without sleep if need be. End of the quote. Were there things the engineers wanted to change but could not? Were there any failures? I quote from Zeta Talk, Proto-Hybrids, written December 1995. We prepared ourselves for the task ahead some thousands of years ago. Our early attempts were failures and died in infancy due to nutritional problems. Soon our proto-hybrids were living into adulthood and data gathering was in full swing. Nervous system difficulties arose and were corrected early, where the brain portions either communicated too effectively or incompletely with each other. For those proto-hybrids, life was a perpetual bad trip, as you say. Too much noise and not enough comprehension. Sexual dysfunction showed up not as a lack of interest in sex, but as infertility, though this was not personally distressing to any of the proto-hybrids. Lack of hair in a hairless Zeta community was also not an embarrassment, but the sporadic hair that appeared on some of our proto-hybrids was a source of consternation. Imagine facial hair spaced every few inches rather than close together and thick. We found this type of hair distressing enough to those born with it that genetic engineering leaned toward hairlessness as the lesser of evils. Our tiny mouths and small teeth did not line up well with human genetics in all cases in our proto-hybrids either. At times, tiny teeth in a big mouth, at times, big teeth in a tiny mouth. Digestive problems were continuously smoothed and are still being addressed. Early proto-hybrids had many nutritional problems which required supplemental nutritional aids. Many of our problems were due to the high standards set by ourselves regarding digestion. No farting, no burping, no fainting from low blood sugar, and no tendency to get fat. We have achieved our goals in this regard. End of the quote. Yuck! Good thing the souls incarnating into these proto-hybrids were volunteers, doing service by being able to report on what life was like inside there. But by the mid-90s, they had arrived. And I quote from Zeta Talk, the 90s model, written March 1996, where earlier phases of the hybrid program had as their goal dealing with basic requirements like digestion and reproduction and intelligence, our recent goals have addressed details like appearance, the senses, and memory. Skin tone has been improved to where it is neither a reddish blush nor a pallor. And as we could not perfect a proper head of hair, we went in the other direction, hairless. Far better bald than with a strand here or there. Breasts are small but functional, a high priority goal of ours due to the bonding that occurs during nursing. The sex drive in the hybrids remains as varied as it does in the human animal. Sight and sound reception is closer to what the Zetas are capable of, vastly higher ranges than humans have ever experienced due to our dim sun and relatively inhospitable planet. Those who could not peek through the gloom or follow a faint sound simply did not survive to reproduce. Where the human animal has many memory levels, short-term, long-term, subconscious, conscious, and others unknown and thus not labeled by humans, the target hybrid has a cohesive memory, much like the Zetas. Having perfected our 90s model, we are now into mass production as the cataclysms are fast approaching. End of the quotes. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.